WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. A Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL. News now.
WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Work to hire a new superintendent for Loudoun County Public Schools is kicking off. The school board says it selected the Arizona-based firm of GR Recruiting to help find the school system's next leader. Recruiting will start immediately. The board says GR Recruiting will also develop a survey that parents and guardians can fill out to offer feedback on what qualities they want in the next superintendent. The board fired former superintendent Dr. Scott Ziegler last year after a grand jury report came out with damning information about how he handled two sexual assaults by the same student in two separate schools in 2021. He now faces multiple misdemeanors. There are still few details about the unknown flying object a U.S. military jet shot down yesterday over the northern coast of Alaska.
Here's what we do know. This object has been described as roughly the size of a small car, much smaller than the suspected Chinese spy balloon, which, of course, the Air Force downed last Saturday. It had been seen flying at approximately 40,000 feet. We are told that the president, based on the advice of the Pentagon, believed it posed enough of a concern that it needed to be shot down. Asked about the interdiction, the president said simply it was a success.
Fox's Kevin Cork. The National Park Service is celebrating Black History with a free event today honoring Frederick Douglass.
From 2 to 4 at the Capitol Turnaround. And the Capitol Turnaround is right, ironically, on the other side of the newly opened Frederick Douglass Bridge.
Douglass, who lived in D.C. for a time, was born into slavery on Maryland's eastern shore and later escaped. Then in 1845, published his autobiography, An American Slave. And following the Civil War, says National Park Service Ranger Vince Vasey.
He came to Washington, D.C. He was sat on a board of a bank. He crusaded for civil rights.
Today's event is free. Barbara Britt, WMAL and WMAL.com.
A mea culpa from the National Archives after March for Life participants filed a lawsuit against them, alleging they were told they couldn't come in unless they took off or covered clothing with pro-life messages. The National Archives and Records Administration says in a statement they sincerely apologize that this happened in the home to the original Constitution and Bill of Rights, which enshrine the rights of free speech and religion. They say their policy expressly allows all visitors to wear clothing that displays protest language, including religious and political speech. The American Center for Law and Justice says a security officer at the archives told the group that its political apparel was disturbing the peace and could incite others. Two ads promoting Christianity will air during the Super Bowl tomorrow, and they're causing some controversy.
Two He Gets Us ads will air, one in each half of the game. 90 seconds of airtime, costing $20 million.
They were spreading love.
It's funded by about 50 Christian individuals and companies, including Hobby Lobby. The ads have had mixed reactions on social media. Some were surprised just seeing them, while others criticized what they call corporate propaganda of the Bible to further an agenda.
Fox's Lauren Green. WMAL Sports. Tonight, the Wizards play the Pacers, and this afternoon, the Caps play the Bruins. Traffic and weather next on WMAL. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Earlier accident on 95 southbound between Lorton and Woodbridge. Now move to the left shoulder. Just a brief tap on the brakes there. No problems on 395 Metzl Road to the 14th Street Bridge. However, there is still the crash activity westbound on the freeway at 8th Street. Watch out for detours there. Also, a portion of Fort Totten Drive is still closed between Gallatin Street and Rock Creek Church Road due to accident investigation activity. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Temperatures much more seasonable. This thanks to the cold front that moved through yesterday. Highs upper 40s, lows tonight falling into the mid 30s. Rain for your Sunday. It's heavy rain possible for some spots as we go into Sunday evening. Temperatures in the low 40s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
Right now, 41 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday morning update.
It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Rave reviews from Democrats and the progressive-leaning media on the president's State of the Union address. To the right, Republicans and conservative media outlets pointing out the number of lies the president told, and they weren't shy about telling him in person that night.
No, they weren't. And again, we are seeing with the State of the Union an end to the decorum that usually accompanies this annual event, and a scene not unlike the British House of Commons or the Japanese Diet, in which members of the opposing party shout out their opinions, sometimes toss a few insults. Case in point, when the president spoke about immigration, there were audible chants of seal the border, seal the border. And when he talked about fentanyl, there was a response that was pretty much heard as, it's your fault. Again, this is unusual. I can recall nearly a decade ago when Barack Obama was speaking about the health care plan and how Americans who were not citizens of the United States would not be covered. Congressman Joe Wilson of South Carolina famously yelled out, "You lie." He had been pushing for legislation to guarantee that non-Americans don't receive health care, and they were being stripped out of the legislation by the Democratic-controlled Congress all day. He was angry. I might add, the next day he apologized, and it was accepted by the then White House Chief of Staff. No one apologized for their remarks to Biden, and we can expect this in future addresses.
Didn't this change a lot when Nancy Pelosi tore up President Trump's State of the Union address, her copy? In other words, you have a few boisterous Republicans in the Congress, but Kevin McCarthy maintained the decorum, even shushed him. In contrast, the leader of the House at the time, Nancy Pelosi, tore up the speech on national television. To me, that's kind of where it all went, you know, down the toilet.
Well, it certainly did. The outburst by Congressman Wilson was isolated, and as I mentioned, he apologized for it. You're referring to when Speaker Pelosi tore up the address in President Trump's final State of the Union message in February of 2020. Now, Kevin McCarthy certainly thought that was a breach of protocol, and he was asked if he would follow in that path and tear up President Biden's speech. He said no, these were childish antics, and he was not going to engage in them. He introduced the president with the traditional warm greeting of the Speaker of the House, and as you say, he shushed the members. Let me add to that that even before the State of the Union address, he had told members of Congress to behave. Well, one thing is certain. McCarthy may be Speaker, and he may have finally mastered the entire Republican conference, but there's some members he's just not going to control, such as his good friend Marjorie Taylor Greene, widely seen yelling, "Liar, liar," at President Biden. As I said, we expect more of this in the future.
We all know the phrase, that's a hard act to follow, and the president's State of the Union address is a hard act to follow for the opposing party when they have their individual response. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the newly elected governor of Arkansas, had that task. John, you've seen a lot of these over the years. What's your assessment of how the former White House press secretary handled it?
I'd give her a B-plus for this. No one can really receive an A. Perhaps the only Republican, at least, who has achieved it in recent times was the late Senator Fred Thompson of Tennessee. He was elected in 1994 and was promptly designated to respond to President Clinton's State of the Union message. He sat on the edge of his desk, surrounded by luggage and boxes, and apologized for it all. But he said, "I've gotten here so quickly, I haven't had time to unpack." He then looked into the camera and gave a point-by-point response to the Democratic president. The next day, his office was flooded with telephone messages and telegrams. That's what we sent in those days, urging him to run for president. Not so with others. Marco Rubio of Florida and Bobby Jindal of Louisiana, both mentioned prominently for the presidency, were inarguably damaged by the bad reviews for their response. Senator Rubio's pausing to drink a glass of water, being mocked on Saturday Night Live. Similarly, Democratic first responders include Stacey Abrams, the defeated candidate for governor of Georgia in 2018, and Congressman Joseph P. Kennedy III of Massachusetts. Both of them went on to defeat in their next trips to the polls. As for Sarah Sanders, well, she started off on a high note, talking about her children. She worked in her dad when he and Democratic Governor Bill Clinton opened the door at Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas, once the scene of controversy over school immigration. And she talked about a new generation of leaders born in the waning days of the previous century, tempered by 9/11, and wishing to lead in the 21st century. Words hauntingly similar and no doubt inspired by John F. Kennedy's inaugural address. Some interpret that as the way in which the youngest governor in the nation at age 40 was showing her former boss, Donald Trump, to the exit door. Essentially, she said that her generation was willing to take on the president, who is twice her age, at age 80, and a new generation was ready to lead. That clearly means that the former president, who will be 76 next year, is not part of this new generation that wants to lead. And in a sense, she's siding with people other than Trump as the next presidential candidate. Overall, how did she do? She took on an impossible task and did fine. That's about as good as it gets.
It was a week of fallout from the balloon incident. And then at the end of the week, we saw yet another object over American territorial waters. The response, a little bit different this time.
It certainly was. According to General Pat Ryder, the spokesman for the U.S. Air Force at the Pentagon, it was promptly shot down under orders from President Biden as soon as he learned about this object. In other words, it was a complete opposite case of rapid responding from that in the shooting down of the Chinese spy balloon. We heard about that balloon for 2 days and then some until it was finally shot down. Even though, and let me emphasize this, it has not been identified as a spy balloon or its origins are a complete mystery. Nonetheless, it was in U.S. airspace, whereabouts and origins unknown, and the Biden administration acted promptly. Now, as for what this means in the future, it may serve as a warning to all balloons. But certainly when a balloon goes over Alaska, which is part of U.S. territory, one has to wonder where it's coming from and what its purposes are. It'll be very interesting when the remaining parts, if any, are examined and there's a report on it.
Ukraine has been eager to join the European Union, and so far that has not happened, but they're not giving up, are they?
No, they're certainly not giving up. President Zelensky attended the meeting of the European Union in Brussels on Thursday, and he posed for photographs with the President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, and the President of the European Council, Charles Michel, and they made it very clear that Ukraine wants membership in the EU, and the EU wants to have Ukraine among its ranks. Now, it should be pointed out that the consistent desire of NATO to bring Ukraine in and the NATO exercises outside of Ukraine within shouting distance of Russia is one of the reasons cited by Vladimir Putin for his provocation into war. As for the EU, that's an economic group, and it is entirely different. But clearly, closer ties to Ukraine by the European community will not be received well at the Kremlin, and we can expect some harsh statements. And when more action is launched against Ukraine, this listed as a reason.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. As always, John, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Rick. And I expect that next week will be an exciting week as well.
Cheryl Atkinson up next, but first, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center at 720.
In the district, you will still find accident investigation activity westbound on the freeway at 8th Street and Southeast. That is exit 1D. Watch out for detours in place there. Also in the district, there is an accident investigation activity that has Fort and Totten Drive closed in both directions between Gallatin Street and Rock Creek Church Road in Northeast. Earlier accident in Virginia on 95 southbound between Lord and Woodbridge has been moved to the left shoulder. No delays to report there. Everything is looking good traveling on the Beltway throughout Maryland and Virginia. The earlier work done on the outer loop at Georgia Avenue has been cleared. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy and dry for your Saturday. Temperatures much colder behind this cold front, but seasonable for this time of year. Upper 40s for highs, and tonight will fall into the mid-30s for lows. Rain chances start in the morning, rain lasting all day long, increasing in intensity by the time we get to the evening hours, and the winds picking up by tomorrow night heading into Monday morning. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
37 degrees in the nation's capital, 721, the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Cheryl Atkinson is with us each week. She hosts Full Measure. That's every Sunday morning at 10 on ABC 7, then throughout the day on News Channel 8. Cheryl, great to have you with us once again.
Good to be here. Thank you.
You bring up a really interesting question tomorrow morning, and that is, does a pharmacist have the power to refuse to fill a legal drug that's prescribed by a doctor? And it's a really interesting question. And how did this come up?
Well, it came up during COVID, but I think it's really important. It's going to persist in other contexts because, yes, actually, it turns out, you'll see in my story tomorrow, pharmacists have the right to refuse to fill. I didn't know that, and I certainly am questioning whether that should be the case. Basically, they can overrule your doctor, who knows the most about you and has prescribed a legal drug for a reason and understands your, you know, why he's prescribing it for you. But then the pharmacy, as they did with ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine for so many people, can just refuse. And it's very interesting. I spoke to a really good pharmaceutical authority that explains why. But I also spoke with a man who he and his wife, his name is Bill Salier, got very sick from COVID, had a prescription for ivermectin and some other early treatments, couldn't get it filled at the pharmacies in town, ended up taking what he called pony paste, the vet version of ivermectin, and basically said, we're being forced to risk our lives and take vet medicine because we can't get a proper prescription for a proper legal medication filled. I think he makes a good point, but this is something that will come up in other contexts too. Can the government sort of pressure or bully corporations not to fill prescriptions for things for political reasons or to help certain pharmaceutical companies or to, you know, lead the public in a certain direction? So that's what we explore in our cover story.
In this litigious society, and especially in this litigious city, it would lead me to wonder what would happen if a pharmacist refuses to fulfill a prescription and the patient either gets gravely ill or dies. It would seem to me it would open up an interesting liability issue there.
It could, and I don't know how that would be handled. I do know the Saliers did try to sue two pharmaceutical companies, Walmart's prescription, you know, arm, as well as the local store that also refused because they said they were forced to take dangerous actions because they couldn't get the safe medicine. And their case was tossed out. I think it's a hard sell, particularly in this political environment, for judges. In their case, the judge said, well, these pharmacists were just doing the right thing based on what CDC said, and CDC told them. And I guess they have a point, except that CDC was wrong about so much. That should that really be what dictates? But bottom line is, right now, what I learned is pharmacists do have the right to not fulfill any prescription they don't want to fill for any reason. I kind of thought their job was just to, you know, look at the order, make sure it's right, make sure the dose is right, and give it to you. But turns out they have a much bigger role if they want to play it.
So if you're taking a medicine for animals, did you hear of any stories as to what happened?
Well, yeah, you know, they meaning the Bill Salier and his wife, he had been quite ill. I mean, they were pretty desperate. He said literally within a couple of hours, he could tell that he had turned the tide and came out of the bedroom for the first time in days to have his children cheer. He said it was so fast that he started feeling better. And I've heard that from a lot of people. I'm not saying I know whether it works or not, but there are a lot of studies, as you'll hear about in my story, say ivermectin is effective for COVID. But there certainly are a lot of doctors who believe in it. And I will say that in November of 2021, according to CDC, 377,000 people a month were being prescribed ivermectin. So that's not just a few fringe doctors doing something kooky. These are a lot of physicians thinking that this would help a lot of patients.
Of course, we have the 2024 elections coming up. We've heard a lot about Russian disinformation from 2020. And you have sort of a historical perspective on this sort of propaganda wars between Russia and the U.S.
Lisa Fletcher looked into this for us, and she put together an interesting story that kind of says both the U.S. and Russia are redeploying some Cold War tactics, because there was so much propaganda going on between us when there was the so-called Cold War with the Soviet Union. Now a lot of that's going on, and she takes a look at who's winning what. I think it's largely considered that we made a good play in the United States by when Russia was preparing to invade Ukraine, by kind of outing them, getting ahead of the game and letting people know what was going to happen on the front end, kind of defeating their propaganda game. But Lisa says we're really going to have to watch out for this as we go into the 2024 presidential election, because there's going to be a lot of repeating of what we saw. And I think we get more sophisticated all the time in terms of how information can get manipulated in ways we may not realize.
Recent legislation proposed on Capitol Hill about stock transactions and members of Congress. You've got a really interesting story tomorrow that involves the regulators. Tell us about that.
Well, I'm interviewing my friend James Grimaldi from the Wall Street Journal, formerly the Washington Post, Pulitzer Prize winner. He and his colleagues have done a great job looking into all kinds of conflicts of interest, whether it's Congress or federal agencies. But in what he's going to tell us about on Sunday, tomorrow, is that they did an investigation looking at federal agencies and people who work there who are investing in and profiting off of the same companies they're supposed to regulate. And depending on whether it's disclosed, it turns out it's perfectly legal. My question is, why is that? This is not something that would be allowed by and large in private industry, but it's being tolerated in the federal agencies. And then there are times when it's not being properly disclosed as required. So he's going to tell us about their investigation. They did a great job. You know, there's not all that much reporting anymore, it seems, where these news organizations are creating their own databases and digging into stuff that we don't already know. So I give them a lot of credit for this really good investigation.
That's all tomorrow morning. Starts at 10 o'clock, ABC 7. Cheryl Atkinson, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer follows the 7:30 news, then KT McFarland on the way as well. Stay with us.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Another case of a kid allegedly committing a crime in D.C. This time it's not a teen, but rather a 7 to 10-year-old. Police are looking for the black boy who they say robbed a home on 11th Street Northwest yesterday. Members of Congress reacting to the takedown of a flying object off the coast of Alaska yesterday. Florida Republican Congressman Carlos Jimenez tells Fox News he doesn't believe in coincidences. He thinks the flying object was sent by the Chinese.
The action was appropriate in this case that it was flying at 40,000 feet. It's a hazard to civilian aviation. But in the case of the balloon, last week, it obviously was a spy balloon. And we shot it down after it completed its mission. That doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
President Biden said the military told him it wouldn't be safe to shoot that balloon down until it was over water. The official death toll for the massive earthquake that hit Turkey and Syria earlier this week now stands at nearly 24,000. As the search continues for survivors today, there have been some miraculous stories. More than a dozen people freed yesterday after spending more than 4 days buried under rubble. The American Turkish Association of Washington, D.C. held a candlelight vigil for the victims at Lafayette Park last night. For the last few days, people have been dropping off tons of donations at the Turkish embassy, including tents, warm clothes, and blankets. The embassy takes donations from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. daily. WMAL Sports this afternoon. The Caps play the Bruins and the Wizards play the Pacers. Traffic and weather next. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Fairfax, watch out for accident activity now on eastbound 66 at 123 along the center of the roadway, and that is causing delays. Also, you will still find accident investigation activity westbound on the freeway at 8th Street. Watch out for detours there. And Fort Dotton Drive is still closed between Gallatin Street and Rock Creek Church Road due to accident investigation activity. Right now, if you are traveling along the Capitol Beltway throughout Maryland and Virginia, looks like everything is moving at speed. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Temperatures much more seasonable, this thanks to the cold front that moved through yesterday. Highs upper 40s, lows tonight falling into the mid-30s. Rain for your Sunday, it's heavy rain possible for some spots as we go into Sunday evening. Temperatures in the low 40s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans and the First Alert Weather Center.
41 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, the president of the London Center for Policy Research, co-host of the Thought to Action podcast, author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
So the White House said late yesterday afternoon that an unknown, quote, high-altitude object had been shot down over the waters off Alaska, altitude 40,000 feet, the size of a car. What can you tell us about this one, Tony?
Not much, other than this is not the only one they're monitoring. Apparently they're trying to keep quiet the fact that this is not the only incursion that they've been monitoring over the past few days. One was near Hawaii. Another now down near Baja. None of them came close to the continental space, but apparently, no surprise, it's a similar object at a similar altitude. So I don't know what to make of that myself, other than clearly the Pentagon's not telling everybody what's going on. And I think they know a whole lot more about this, this object they took down over Alaska. I think it's a drone of some sort, of some configuration. They blew it to smithereens, so I'm not sure how much we're going to find when they pick up the pieces. But in my judgment, while there's no direct evidence, I do believe the pattern would fit something that we forecast last weekend on another network, not with you, but right later in the same day, that I thought that after we failed to adequately and quickly deal with the Chinese balloon, the collection balloon, which Pentagon's admitted was a spy platform, that the Chinese would quickly follow on with more aggressive actions. I'm still forecasting that we're going to come to find that these are probably Chinese small drones just meant to kind of see how we react based on, and antagonize based on what happened last week.
So the president said that it wasn't a breach. I think even some Democratic senators beg to differ. What do we know about the communications that were monitored? That was one of the things that that came out in some reports this week, that spy balloon that floated over the United States was picking up communications.
It was. Apparently it was able to detect and record in some fashion, but that how it records it has not been revealed yet. Very minute radio emissions. That is to say, you know, cell phones on the ground. They could be picking up on you and me if they flew within line of sight of what we were talking about. So it's very significant in that, yeah, it was collecting. The question is, why was it collecting? What was, where was it going and all this? And the whole narrative of Joe Biden and all these other folks saying, oh, it's not that big, it's a huge deal. And this thing could have just as easily been a weapon of some sort. One of the things that I and others have spoken about before is that you don't have to have close proximity to bring in a weapon that could do some damage to the electric grid and things like that through electromagnetic pulse. So, Rick, the fact is this thing came across the nation. Joe Biden is lying. Either he was lied to or he's lying regarding when they could have brought it down. We have whole classes of lasers on airplanes that could basically have done pinhole compromises of the balloon and brought it down softly within 1 mile before they wanted it. But that was a political choice to allow it to do its mission and shoot it down in a very dramatic PR moment that benefited Joe Biden to show that he's still strong at the very end of it. So don't buy what the Pentagon or Joe Biden's putting out about it.
All right, let us move on. And there were some hearings on Capitol Hill this week about the weaponization of the government. And Chuck Grassley, I played some of what Chuck Grassley revealed in his testimony. The senator actually testifying at a congressional hearing was very interesting. But what stood out to you about those hearings?
Well, I think just the pattern of wrongdoing that many bureaucracies are engaged in right now regarding the fundamental violation of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. This is something you and I have spoken about on and off air a number of times. But, you know, I listened to Tulsi Gabbard's testimony. No wonder she left the left. You know what I'm saying? It's like, man, if you've got folks who are willing to violate the rights of anyone, especially those who are considered political enemies, who wants to be in that club? You know, I know I don't. And so I think the pattern of abuse and the massive collaboration between the media and the government when they decide they're going to do a dog pile on someone is very significant. And this is something that I look forward to hearing more hearings about this because it's happened serially. I was victimized by it myself back when I had to be a whistleblower regarding Able Danger. So this is not something new, but it's something that clearly we have to get to the bottom of and start, you know, kind of parsing through and removing power from bureaucracies, which clearly abuse American rights of Americans.
You know, it's fascinating to see how the Democrats are just like, hey, there's no there. You know, there's nothing to see here. Move on, folks. Nothing going on here.
There's no there for them because they're the ones who use it. So just let's be clear on why they're not actually upset about this. So.
And talk about the southern border for a moment or so. There were some reports that the blimps, they've been using blimps down there, DOD blimps, to do surveillance. And there's a big uproar this week about the fact that they were cutting back from 12 blimps down to 4 blimps. And that would strike me as a layman to say, well, that's not very good to take 8 balloons out of the sky that are, you know, blimps that are watching the border. But you see it differently.
Aerostats have been a failed technology from their introduction in the 1990s. This is something that gives people some level of comfort because you see a big thing in the sky with a F-16 radar on it, and somehow people think, oh, that's protecting us. It's not. I've seen those things in Key West. The Army actually had a boat, U.S. Army ship, believe it or not, Rick, and we would float this thing around the Caribbean looking for drug planes, and it just never worked. I've seen these things at Fort Huachuca when I was going through school. And I've seen these things in Afghanistan and Bagram. And all they ever did was break loose, force people to spend time and resources to go track them down and bring them back. And I've never seen a significant detection or report come from these very expensive blimps. So when I hear this, it's like, okay. It's like, I don't think we're losing anything, just saying so.
Okay, I got 30 seconds. The Biden administration would have us believe that they've implemented all this new technology at the southern border, and there's all this aggressive action being taken at the border to reduce the immigration. Have you seen any of that or any effects from it?
No. Of course
well,
not.
This didn't take long.
Look at what, we just went through one of the biggest shams they could put up for, you know, to show technology. You know, that's an aerostat or a technology which doesn't work. But boy, you put it down there, it makes it look like you're making progress. It does nothing. They've done nothing to improve it. That's why Mayorkas is about to be impeached, because he at the top has implemented a series of restrictions which do not permit those on the ground from doing their job. And if anything, you've seen the Biden administration working against, you know, what they say by being in Latin America and encouraging behind the scenes this immigration. So, no, the answer is, and if we had more time, I could sit down and probably cite some of the things which I think they could do easily. But at this point, just suffice to say, there's nothing that's observable that shows they've changed anything except for allowing and encouraging people to come across the border illegally.
And a quick hit for the Thought to Action podcast, which got this weekend.
So, yeah, we're going to be taping with Cherie Curry and all the girls, the rock and roll legends on Culture Wars. We had to delay our taping Friday to Monday because one of them had a cold, but we'll be taping that, and you guys will see that soon. We'll be talking about all the different woke issues in culture, so tune in.
And you'll find the podcast at londoncenter.org. Tony, thank you so much.
Thanks, Rick.
747, KT McFarland coming up next, but Michelle Murray's up first with the latest from the WMAL Traffic Center.
Couple of accidents now to watch out for on 66. One is in Manassas eastbound at Business 234 Sudley Road in the right lane, and then in Fairfax eastbound at 123. There is an accident there in the 2 center lane, so watch out for a delay approaching that scene. Also, still some accident investigation activity affecting the freeway westbound at 8th Street, so watch out for diversions there. And also in the district, there is a portion of Fort Totten Drive that is still closed between Gallatin Street and Rock Creek Church Road in Northeast, also for accident investigation activity. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy and dry for your Saturday. Temperatures much colder behind this cold front, but seasonable for this time of year. Upper 40s for highs, and tonight will fall into the mid-30s for lows. Rain chances start in the morning, rain lasting all day long, increasing in intensity by the time we get to the evening hours, and the winds picking up by tomorrow night heading into Monday morning. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
37 degrees, 7:48, Saturday morning update. The Saturday morning update continues, 7:51. I'm Rick Fowler. KT McFarland joins us, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People, and, of course, the former Deputy National Security Advisor for President Trump. Good morning, KT.
Good morning, Rick.
Well, we see yet another incursion of American airspace. It has not been identified yet as being from China, but there are some reports of other surveillance around Hawaii and Mexico. Tell us a little bit about this whole Chinese surveillance plan. It's not just, it's just not balloons.
No, you know, we've been kind of caught flat-footed with this new kind of warfare spyware. It's a drone-like surveillance. You know, there are no people flying in the balloons. But they seem to be got all over the world, either these balloons or other objects. It's not satellites, which fly way, way, way high. These are balloons, which you can look up and see in the naked eye. And they're over the United States. They're over the other parts of the world. And they're sending back data. Now, if this, you know, maybe this new one that was shot down yesterday, maybe it's China, too. I suspect it is. But it's like we've all of a sudden woken up and said, oh, my gosh, we're in some new era, and we don't really know how to deal with it. First of all, balloons, not only can they, these spy balloons, can they spy and send back data and information, but they also have the ability to carry electromagnetic pulse weapons, EMP weapons. These are like a low-grade nuclear weapon that, if detonated in a low altitude, like this balloon was, have the ability to fry all the electronics in a very, very, very large area and basically rendering the United States, which is completely dependent upon electronics for everything from waking up in the morning to automatically heating your coffee to starting your car to doing your internet to do everything, that we would be really helpless. I mean, our civilization would come to a screeching halt. They also have the ability to carry hypersonic weapons, which are these weapons that go faster than the speed of sound that the Chinese have developed, the Russians seem to have developed. We have not developed. We're playing catch-up ball, and we certainly have no defense for it. So these balloons, these spy balloons, are scary in and of themselves, their abilities that they have, that they potentially could have. But it's really, it speaks to a bigger issue. China's attitude towards all surveillance seems to be, whether it's the data breaches of 15 years ago where they took everybody's, in America's, you know, driver's license number and healthcare information, we can never figure out what they're going to do with all that stuff. Well, it now turns out that they've collected, and then they'll figure out what to do with it later. And the later is once quantum computing, that's really high-speed computing, and artificial intelligence become more developed. The Chinese will have already laid the groundwork and all have done the research to get all that data about people. So it's everything from facial recognition software to voice recognition software to all the ways they spy on us, from TikTok to other, you know, to even now the spy satellite. And I think we need to have a really serious look at two things. One, what are the Chinese up to? You know, is their game plan to dominate the intelligence world and the sort of spy satellite world and the spy balloon world the same way that the British set out at the beginning of the British Empire to dominate the oceans and dominate trade? So what is China doing, and how are they doing it, and what are their goals with it? But then the other thing is we need to have a good look at ourselves. You know, since the post-war period, we've dominated all of the technology, whether it's been creation of computers or the Internet or any kind of manufacturing. And really, since the Industrial Revolution, we've been the world dominator for manufacturing and technology. But we're not anymore. You know, we need to double our R&D budget. We need to go back to Reagan-era efforts of R&D if we plan to maintain this technological lead, which all of us seem to take for granted. You know, China's ahead on quantum computing, artificial intelligence, hypersonics, weapons of the future, and technologies of the future. And I don't believe much of what Vladimir Putin says, but he did say something pretty smart once. He said, whoever gets to artificial intelligence first owns the future. And we've got to make sure that's us. And we are not spending the resources that we need to develop these technologies, to secure these technologies once we develop them, and then to use them in our own manufacturing. So two things. Figure out China. What are they up to? And number two, figure out what we need to be up to.
You know, we're so focused on the surveillance at 40,000 feet. What about the surveillance 4 feet in front of us on our computers? I mean, you've got TikTok, which now is banned on the federal government computers. You have this going on and all the data they collect from all the apps that we're using these days. Yet President Biden says, well, it's competition. It's not conflict. Mm-hmm. And does he have any sense of the gravity of this?
No, I think he's living in another generation. The TikTok, I mean, the real problem I see it with TikTok is, yes, they're gathering every information. Once you put TikTok on your cell phone or on your computer, but on your cell phone, it has access to your whole life. It has access to your contact list, to all of your communications, your all of your pictures, everything. And while the people who use TikTok the most, you know, 14-year-old kids, they think, ha, 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 I've got my little computer and I'm going to keep secrets from mom and dad. Well, they might be, but they're not keeping secrets from the Chinese intelligence services.
Wow.
And it's not just the creepiness of you go to bed at night, you put your cell phone next to you, they're listening to everything you're doing, your every nightmare, your every dream, your every act. But it's worse than that, because once they take all that information, then they can use it to create algorithms to scramble your brain. And they do it by feeding you certain things, by censoring other things, so that they start playing with the reality of your head. So it's not just, oh, they're spying on your communications. It's like they're trying to scramble your brain. Why? Because the Chinese realize that the great strength but the great weakness of the United States is democracy and people's opinions. And if they can artificially change people's opinions and interfere with their thought processes, yeah, that's another way they control the future.
So that explains why the Democrats think the way they do. K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. K.T., as always, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
That's it for the Saturday morning update. Of course, the big game is tomorrow, and there's nobody to root for. You don't want to root for Kansas City because they win all the time, and we all don't care for the Eagles. So I don't know what we do. That's it. We'll see you this afternoon at 1 on Garden Sense.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.